Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Amshuman, Text 31. Tasya Sador Apapasya Brunasya Brahmavadinaha Katam Vadam Yata Babror Manyate Sanmato Bhava Tasya Sadora Papasya Brunasya Brahmavadinaha Katam Vadham Yata Babror Manyate Sanmato Bhava Tasya Sadora Papasya Brunasya Brahmavadinaha Katam Vadham Yata Babror Manyate Sanmato Bhava Tasya Sadhora Papasya Brunasya Brahmavadinaha Katam Vadham Yata Babror Manyate Sanmato Bhava Tasya Sado Papasya Pranasya Brahmavadina Babror Te Sanmato Bhava Pranasya Pranasya Brahma Vadina Avadam Yata Vadhar Sarva Bhava Tasya Sarva Papasya Pranasya Brahma Vadina Kitam Vadhar Yata Vadhar Manyate Sanmato Bhava Vaishnavis Asya Sara Papasya Pranasya Brahma Vadina Tamina Vababra Manyate Sanmato Bhava Vaishnavis Tasya Sadhora Papasya Pranasya Brahmavadina Katam Vadam Yata Vavar Manyate Sanmato Bhavam Tasya of him Sadaho of the great saintly person Papasya, of one who has no sinful life. Brunasya, of the embryo. Brahmavadinaha, of one who is well versed in Vedic knowledge. Katam, how? Padam, the killing. Yata, as Babraho of a cow. Manyate, you are thinking. Satmataha, well recognized by higher circles. Bhavan, your good self. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. You are well known and worshipped in learned circles. How dare you kill this Brahmana, who is a saintly, sinless person, well-versed in Vedic knowledge? Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb or killing a cow. Please repeat. You are well known and worshipped in learned circles. How dare you kill this Brahmana, who is a saintly, sinless person, well versed in Vedic knowledge? Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb or killing a cow. Purport. As stated in the Amara Kosha dictionary, Brunar Bhike Balagarbe, the word Bruna refers either to the cow or to the living entity in embryo. According to Vedic culture, destroying the undeveloped embryo of the soul in the womb is as sinful as killing a cow or a brahmana. In the embryo, the living entity is present in an undeveloped stage. The modern scientific theory that life is a combination of chemicals is nonsense. Scientists cannot manufacture living beings, even like those born from the eggs. The idea that scientists can develop a chemical situation resembling that of an egg and bring life from it is nonsensical. Their theory that a chemical combination can have life may be accepted, but these rascals cannot create such a combination. This verse refers to Brunasya Vadham, the killing of a Bruna, or the destruction of the embryo. Here is a challenge from the Vedic literature. The crude atheistic understanding that the living entity is a combination of matter belongs to the grossest ignorance. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, sometimes the Srimad Bhagavatam presents us with great challenges to our understanding of life. Sometimes these things are very, very difficult to talk about because on one level they're extremely personal. And they are very challenging to current secular conceptions of morality. Just to review where we are, there was King Saudasa, who was a member of the Surya Vamsha, a descendant of King Ikshvaku, and some of the other kings that are mentioned in this chapter. So he had killed a Rakshasa in the forest But this Rakshasa had a brother who became the cook in King Saudasa's kitchen. So he wanted to take some revenge on the king. So when the king's spiritual master, Vasishta, came to the house of the king, the cook arranged for him to be served meat in a disguised way. So Vasishta detected that this was going on, and he blamed the king. So he cursed the king to become a Rakshasa himself, although the king was really innocent in this regard. So because of this curse, Saudasa, although he remained king, he had within himself this nature which would come out at certain times, this Rakshasa nature. So when he was in the forest and saw this Brahmana and his wife about to engage in intercourse, he was influenced by his Rakshasa nature, and he was going to kill and eat the Brahmana. So here the wife is trying to dissuade him from doing that, explaining that this is a sinless, saintly Brahmana, and killing him would be like killing a cow or killing an embryo within the womb. Of course, these things are very common in modern society. Actually, probably by the mercy of the Lord, or the fact that we're so dull, we're not really aware of all the suffering that's going on, that's being inflicted on, you know, the cows and the unborn children. So, but it's a fact. It's going on, and it's being pointed out here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada describes it as a challenge. Yeah, it is. It's a challenge to the modern secular standards of morality. And Srila Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport, the reason why killing the embryo in the womb is so bad is because there is a soul there. And the soul is being given an opportunity to take birth in the human form of life, which is very rare. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, it's stated in Vedanta Sutra, that after perhaps millions of births in different species, the soul finally gets the human form of life in which it is possible to transcend the cycle of samsara, the cycle of birth and death. So this is the first lesson in Vedic philosophy, the Vedic understanding, to understand that the self, the conscious self, the soul, is different than the body. And throughout the Vedic literature, we get lessons in that. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Bhumir apa nala vayu kam mana buddha eva cha ahankar etiyam me bina prakrita ashtada apare mitvastvam yam prakriti vidi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayadam daryate jagat. So Krishna is making a distinction between the material elements, earth, fire, water, air, false ego, ether, mind, intelligence. There are subtle and gross material elements, but beyond them, Krishna says, apareyam itvastam yam prakriti vidhi me param. There's another energy of mind which is superior to them, and that is the jiva, the soul, the conscious self. Dehino smin yata dehe. Within the body is the conscious self, even within the embryo. The jiva is there. It's explained in the Vedic teachings that the jiva is within the semen of the father, and when there is conception, the soul within the semen enters the egg in the womb of the mother and begins to develop a body. So sometimes people may think, well, it's not conscious. Even in the Vedic literature, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we learned that until about the seventh month, the consciousness of the embryo is not fully awakened. But at that time, it does become fully awakened. And the jiva and the embryo within the womb actually begins to pray to Krishna. So it is conscious and aware. It is going to become conscious and aware. I mean, you know, like Srila Prabhupada replied to this argument that, well, at a certain stage, the embryo really isn't fully conscious. He said, well, then it's okay to kill a man when he's sleeping, because he's not conscious or aware if he's in deep sleep. But he is going to wake up, so you can't kill him. So the embryo in the womb is gradually going to develop its consciousness, its full awareness, even within the womb. And then when it's outside the womb, it has the opportunity to become Krishna conscious, to become self-realized, to become free from the whole cycle of birth and death. So to interrupt that opportunity is not good. It's considered to be sinful according to the Vedic standards. And therefore, killing the embryo within the womb at whatever stage is considered to be a bad thing, and there's a reaction for it. And Srila Prabhupada many times describes the reaction for it, that, you know, the persons involved in such things, they themselves will have to undergo the same thing, enter a womb and become killed. And then perhaps if they're like a doctor who's committed many of these things, then Srila Prabhupada says such persons will not see the light of day, because they'll enter one womb, undergo an abortion, enter another womb, be aborted, never even see the light of day. So these things are very challenging to the modern conceptions of morality, but they are there. At the same time, Lord Krishna is very compassionate, and if a person agrees to give up their sinful activities, then all the past karma can be removed. I mean, there's so many examples in the Vedic literature of greatly sinful people being relieved of their karma by the process of surrendering to a pure devotee. So at the same time in Krishna consciousness, we can be aware of, you know, these different reactions that are there for different activities. but at the same time, Vaishnav compassion is there, and the possibility of becoming freed from these reactions of even these very sinful acts is there. Now this Srila Prabhupada connects this understanding of killing the embryo within the womb with the idea the scientists have that life comes from chemicals. So if people think that life is just a combination of chemicals, then it becomes much easier for them to justify such things as killing animals like the cows, killing embryo within the womb. If they think life is just a combination of chemicals, then it becomes much easier to think like that, to justify such actions. But Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that this idea that life comes from chemicals is a nonsensical idea. And he emphasized this very much in his teachings. He said, life comes from life. And he wanted his scientifically trained disciples to establish that idea in the world of science. Of course, today, in all the high schools and universities, you know, they teach as an absolute fact that life comes from chemicals. You know, they say in the beginning there were just some chemicals in the Earth's early atmosphere or in the oceans, and somehow or other they combined together to form some first living thing. In other words, from chemicals comes life. And Srila Prabhupada rejected that idea, and he wanted his scientifically trained disciples to oppose it. There was one of his disciples, Tudam Damodar Singh, who later became initiated as Swarup Damodar and later Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami. And he was a student at the University of California at Irvine, and he was studying biochemistry there. And he became acquainted with Srila Prabhupada, and you know, Srila Prabhupada instructed him on this idea that life can only come from life. Life cannot come from chemicals, as the modern scientists say. So they were having a morning walk conversation here in Los Angeles, and Swarup Damodar related to Srila Prabhupada how he was at the university and a famous scientist came to speak in his department, his biochemistry department. And that was a man named Stanley Miller. So this Stanley Miller had performed a very famous experiment where he had taken some gases like hydrogen and nitrogen and passed an electric spark through them and produced some very simple organic chemicals, amino acids they're called. So this was considered to be, you know, scientific proof that life can come from chemicals, but not really. Amino acids are just simple molecules. They do not amount to a living thing. Just like you may have a pile of bricks, you can produce some bricks, but how do you organize the bricks into a big elaborate castle or temple? They're not going to, you know, even if they, you can get the bricks, that doesn't mean you get the structure, which is equivalent to a living thing. Of course, the real living thing, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, is jiva bhuta mahabaho, the jiva, the conscious self, the soul. That's the actual living thing. Srila Prabhupada would point out, like sometimes a child will see a car and not understand that there's a driver in the car. So we may see a biological form, whether it's a single cell or a plant or an animal, and think that that's the actual living entity. But the actual living entity is the soul within the body. But in any case, Swarup Damodar related to Srila Prabhupada how he had challenged this very famous scientist who had performed this so-called experiment proving he could produce life. Swarup Damodar had said to him, if I give you all the chemicals, can you produce not just these amino acids, but can you produce an actual living thing? And the man had to confess he could not. So Srila Prabhupada was very happy to hear that. And he was very happy that one of his disciples had challenged a prominent scientist in a public arena on this very important question. And he said to Swarup Damodar, you should travel everywhere to universities all around the world and say this, and I'll pay all your expenditures to do it. So these are very important points of our philosophy. The ethical concerns are related to the ontological concerns, what really exists. So, I also want to take a few minutes to speak about Lokanath Goswami, who was an associate of Lord Chaitanya according to our BBT calendar. Today is his disappearance day. And he was an associate of Lord Chaitanya. He lived in Bengal. And before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he called Lokanath to him and said, I would like you to go to Vrindavan and start locating the lost places of pilgrimage there. Because Krishna had appeared in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago, but then after he had left this world, many of the places of his pastimes had been lost and forgotten. And it was one of the big accomplishments of Lord Chaitanya that he sent his followers like Lokanath Goswami and later Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and others to relocate these lost places of pilgrimage. So, and he said, later I'm going to take sannyas. Lord Chaitanya said, and I'll come and I'll visit you there. So, Lokanath Goswami went to Vrindavan, and he remained there, and he waited and waited, and Lord Chaitanya didn't come. So he heard, you know, from sources back in Bengal that Lord Chaitanya had started out for Vrindavan, but Lord Nityananda had kind of diverted him to Shantipur, to the house of Advaita. And there he had decided to make his headquarters in Puri, and he'd gone to Puri, and from there he'd gone to South India. So Lokanath Goswami decided to go track down Lord Chaitanya in South India, so he walked to South India. Like in those days, people didn't have mobile phones and rapid means of travel, except for yogis and things like that. Ordinarily, they traveled by walking. So when he got to South India, he learned that Lord Chaitanya had already returned to Puri and that he was going to go to Vrindavan. So then he raced all the way back to Vrindavan. And when he got to Vrindavan, he learned that Lord Chaitanya had already left there. But then so he was going to try to follow Lord Chaitanya back to Puri. But in a dream or a vision, Lord Chaitanya appeared to him and told him just to remain in Vrindavan because other devotees would be coming to join him there. So details like this are given in a book called the Bhakti Ratnakara. It's not much said about Lokanath and Chaitanya Charitamrita because when Krishna Das Kaviraj was writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he went to get blessings of all the leading devotees, and he went to Lokanath Goswami and asked for his blessings, and he said, yes, I'll give you my blessings, but don't you mention anything about me in the book. So therefore we don't see very much. You know, some devotees are like that. They don't want anybody to mention them or glorify them in any way. So another aspect of his life was he remained in Vrindavan at a place called Kishori Kund, which is in a remote area of Vrindavan, and he had a desire to establish a little temple there and worship a deity of Krishna, but he didn't have any deity or any means. So Lord Chaitanya appeared to him and gave him a little deity of Krishna, Radha-Vinod. So he began to worship that deity there in this Kishori Kund. Very simply, he was keeping the deity in a tree and making offerings. Eventually, he brought it into Vrindavan, and later a temple was built there. It's called the Radha Gokulananda Temple. And his deities of Vinod Lal, Radha Vinod, were there for some time, and then there were some invasions, and today they're in Jaipur. You know, a lot of the Vrindavan deities were moved to Jaipur. Another feature of his life is he had only one disciple. Actually, he had vowed to take no disciples, but Lord Chaitanya had told him, a personality named Narottam is going to come, and you'll accept him as disciple. So he accepted that one disciple, who turned out to be a great preacher. He was one of the devotees who went from Vrindavan taking all the books of the Goswamis to the eastern part of India, back to Bengal. So there was another guru who had only one disciple, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, and his one disciple was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. So, does anybody have any questions or comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu.
Soul and this type of thing. I mean, is there any evidence that supports it. Aside from the authority of your literature, why should somebody accept this idea that there is a soul?
Well, a whole lecture could be given on that. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna appeals to reason. He says, from boyhood, you can see that the body is constantly changing, but that, the self remains, maintains its integrity, even though the physical body is changing, going through so many changes. So it's natural, Krishna says, to suppose that when the body undergoes its final change, the self will continue to persist and take on another embodiment. And another thing that Krishna explains to Arjuna, which is not just on the authority of scripture, but it's a logical argument, says if you think life really is just some bunch of chemicals, then why are you upset? Chemicals are constantly integrating and disintegrating, and so why are you so concerned about life and death and these questions? So these are all things that even an average person can appreciate. In other words, if we are just a bunch of chemicals and there is no soul, then why are we so concerned? I mean, we take a glass of water and we throw it down the sink. We're not so concerned. It's just molecules, chemicals. So if our bodies are nothing more than that, if that's what we are, it's just a bunch of chemicals that have come together, then why are we so concerned? Why do we feel threatened when our existence is threatened? It's because there's something there that by nature is eternal. So you can make arguments like that, as Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita. And then in the modern context, there are different categories of scientific evidence that tend to best be explained by positing the existence of some conscious self that can survive the death experience and that is different than the body. That takes you into medical studies of out-of-body experiences that people have and past life memories and things like that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.